And that looks like it.
Awesome, we're live. All right, hello world, my name is Don, and you're watching Showcase for the week ending Sunday, May 29th, 2022. We are halfway through Memorial Day weekend, apparently. Hope you all are having a happy and safe holiday. Stop the presses, right? This is our Sunday show, and that means weird headlines and your live chat comments. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Don't forget to hit that like button and the subscription bell. And as always, if you're with me live, don't forget to drop a comment in the live chat and I might read it off on the air. So let's go ahead and get started with the first order of business here. This is from ndtv.com. I've never heard of this journalistic outlet, but all right, I guess they have something here. Sheep sentenced to 3 years in jail for killing a woman in Africa. Okay, let's take a look at that. All right, this was posted on the 24th, about 5 days ago here. In a bizarre case, a sheep in South Sudan has been sentenced to, hold on a second. This thing is giving me a weird disclaimer or advertisement. There we go. All right, so a sheep in South Sudan has been sentenced to jail for 3 years after it was found guilty of killing a woman. According to Sudan's iRadio, the ram was taken into police custody in South Sudan earlier this month after it attacked 45-year-old Adu Shaping. I'm probably butchering that name, I apologize. The ram had headbutted Miss Shaping repeatedly, breaking her ribs. Ouch, the 45-year-old died immediately because of her injuries. Oh my God. Okay, back then the police had informed the incident took place in Rumbek East in a place called Akelyol. The ram was apprehended and taken into custody at a police station in Maleng Angok Payam. Again, just spitballing at the correct pronunciation of this. Okay. So this is one of those things that is definitely weird news. We are seriously starting off strong here. I've never heard of anything like this where like you have an animal that is being determined as like a murderer, basically. Like this is not really the sort of thing that usually animals get held responsible for. Wow. And there's a subtitle under here. The local court has ruled that the owner of the ram, I'm just going to, again, guess at pronouncing this, Duni Manyang Dal, will also have to hand over 5 cows to the victim's family. Okay. I guess that's their version of a certain fine or community service on top of jail time, I guess, for what's basically manslaughter, I guess. Is that what that would be? Or I don't know. I don't know what that murder. Good grief. Speaking to the media outlet, Major Elijah Mabor explained, quote, "The owner is innocent and the ram is the one who perpetrated the crime. So it deserves to be arrested. And then later on, the case shall be forwarded to customary court where the case can be handled amicably," end quote. Citing local media reports, Lad Bible reported that the ram will be spending the next 3 years in a military camp in Adel County headquarters in Sudan's Lake State. The local court has ruled that the owner of the ram will also have to hand over 5 cows. Yeah, we have a comment here. Never mind. So let's see. Moreover, Mr. Dahl will almost likely lose the ram at the end of its sentence. This is crazy. this is definitely crazy. No idea where in the world, where else in the world that could possibly, I missed the thing. I didn't think it said anything about like premeditated motive, but like how did they even determine motive for this? Like there's some more information that I think needs to be extrapolated from that story. But this and all the stories that we're covering tonight are linked in the description down below if you're curious and would like to read more about that. But we had to move on. We're already 6 minutes into the hour here. Let's move on. This is again from ndtv.com. We've got more weird news pertaining to animals here. Strange looking alligator missing top half of its jaw spotted in the US. Holy crap. Okay. Let's see. The only likely explanation could be that the gator got into a nasty brawl with a fellow alligator or an alligator hunter, according to the subtitle here. This is posted again 4 days ago, May 25. A 9-foot-long alligator living in the murky water of Everglades, Florida, is missing a large chunk of its upper jaw. Posts or photos shared by a Facebook user show. In the images, the bottom jaw and teeth of the gator can be seen peeking above the water's surface, but it was missing the entire top part of its jaw. Stacey Lynette wrote in the post, adding, quote, I saw this gator far away and he looked weird to me. I grabbed my camera and sure as, expletive deleted, the whole end of his top jaw is missing. The photo quality is crap because he was really far away. By the looks of him, he's doing all right though. This looks like where a TikTok video would be embedded, but my browser is not really showing that right here for whatever reason. Newsweek explained, alligators often fight each other over mating rights and territorial disputes, especially during the mating season. The gators can seriously injure each other to the point of losing limbs and eyes. Therefore, it is possible that this particular alligator lost its jaw as part of one of these fights. That's interesting. And actually, for a rather unexpected reason, I have to say, I ordered something off of Amazon several days ago. And as it arrived, I got into an interesting little quick discussion with the delivery driver about basically the personal security sort of risks that sort of come into play when you're a delivery driver, not necessarily for Amazon, but, you know, all the package delivery, you know, UPS, FedEx, Postal Service, you know. And we got into a discussion about, like, what kind of animals pose a risk to the delivery drivers. She said something really profound I didn't see coming. Apparently, roosters are remarkably aggressive, and I had no idea of that, like, being so prevalent. You know, like, there's been evidence in movies and cartoons and even real life examples going back decades ever, basically, for pets like dogs, you know, being really aggressive. Sometimes cats will be really aggressive and territorial, but I had never before earlier this week heard of roosters being territorial. This actually reminds me of that, the idea of animals being really aggressively territorial to the point of risking self-harm, like risking, like, actually, like, coming away from the scuffle or whatever they're doing with, like, serious physical damage. You know, it's one of those weird things that the root cause of it, if you have, like, evidence of it beyond hearsay, if you actually have proof of it, you know, that's the only way to really believe it, because it's just so weird and unexpected to see that sort of thing happening just in the wild, in public like that. What's the weirdest animal story that you've ever seen or heard of? Like, or what, actually, let me go ahead and phrase that another way. What's the craziest animal story that you may have come across, like either in your personal life or that you've heard of from somebody else? Maybe drop it in the comments section and I might read it off on the air here. If you do it within the hour, because we got to go until about 7 o'clock, let's move on to the next topic here. This is again from NDTV. Dog found, oh my God, dog found with arrow through its neck. Animal Services says it has recovered. Okay. I hesitate to click through to this. There's probably more graphic images than this. This thumbnail alone is hard enough to look at, but the link to this is in the description down below. I have to skip this on the chance that some people are eating dinner while watching this stream. But it's in the link is in the description down below. But the headline does say Animal Services says it has recovered. So I want to go ahead and stress that as we move on. This is next topic. Bermuda Triangle cruise promises full refund if ship disappears. Oh, okay. Well, that's at least that's some level of, I guess, buyer's insurance, for lack of a better way to put it, I suppose. Let's take a look. So here we are. In a bizarre offer, a cruise bound for the mysterious Bermuda Triangle has promised passengers that they will receive a full refund if the ship disappears, according to UK media. This was posted yesterday, May 28th. The infamous Bermuda Triangle, also known as the Devil's Triangle, has remained a mystery as dozens of ships and flights have mysteriously disappeared in this region, stated the media. The reason behind the disappearances has remained unexplained and has been attributed to the outcome of weather and human error. Conspiracy theorists have blamed supernatural causes and aliens for the disappearances of ships and flights. In an advertisement on its website, the travel agency, the Ancient Mysteries Cruise, has said, quote, don't worry about disappearing on this Bermuda Triangle tour. The tour has a 100% return rate and your money will be refunded in the rare chance you disappear. Wow. So we all know, we've all heard of the Bermuda Triangle before this, obviously. We all know about the stories of, you know, I think it was Amelia Earhart famously disappeared flying through the Bermuda Triangle. You know, this has been explored. I remember they did an episode of Futurama, I think, about this. They called it the Bermuda Tetrahedron because it was in space, like 1,000 years in the future. That whole show takes place there. So, you know, this the lore has been explored to death billions of different ways over the decades. But it's like, I've never seen an instance where basically the legend is something that's embraced this deliberately by an organization that really kind of has everything to lose by something like this happening. Like, this is, it's funny on the surface. This is funny weird news. I'm gonna file this under funny, because this is it really sort of begs the question of like, what do they have sort of, not just for like for justify, for sort of, how do I put this, for measuring the extent of the disappearance, you know, or the damage, not really damage. If you disappear, how do they convey the refund? How do they, you know, like, how you can't just like put a blanket guarantee out without sort of a mechanism in place for that. If it's being presented as a serious guarantee, obviously it's sort of tongue in cheek here, but like, given that we're talking about the Bermuda Triangle, okay, and there is at the very least a plausible sense of risk associated with this, you can joke about it all you want, obviously, but it's like, what do they actually have a serious plan that's not to be taken quite as facetiously as this offer? Or does the joke stop here? I'm actually kind of curious about that, but let's go ahead and move on to the next topic. I'm sure there's more stuff about this. The link to this topic and more information is in the description down below, as is the links to other topics that we're discussing tonight. It's about 6:15 right now on the East Coast, 3:15 on the West, excuse me, 6:12. My main clock that I look at is a few minutes ahead. But yeah, we're coming up on the quarter way point through the hour here. Thanks so much for watching. Don't forget to smash that like button and subscription bell, and drop me a chat if you want to go ahead and, ooh, sorry, you had to see that again. the puppy with the neck damage. So let's move on to the next topic. Let's see. This is from Metro. Pub owner bans job applicants with body odor, bad teeth, and dodgy toes. I don't know what that refers to. Dodgy toes. Let's take a look here. All right. So this was posted about five days ago on Metro, which is a UK-based publication or blog of some kind here. So a pub owner has, okay, here we are. Craig Harker, 35, posted an online vacancy for chefs, kitchen porters, and front of house staff for his George Pub and Grill venues across Teesside. He said he's usually inundated with sloppy applicants, so wanted to whittle the competition down with some particular requirements. The job advert said those that attend with that fruity BO odor, it's a no-go. Oh, wait, this may be a typo. Oh, wait, give your pits a wash before you come down for an interview, a quick whiff and spray those bad boys. Wow. First impressions count, that includes brushing those tusks too. The key part for any interview is first impressions. Don't have mine, as this person clearly needs a wash and have me turning my head because of that naughty breath that stings my cheeks. All right, I'm going to stop this here. wow, this is a little uncomfortable to read, but for a completely opposite reason than we had with the puppy arrow story earlier, obviously. I can't, how bad must it be in general, and how frequently must that be happening with your applicants, where you feel it's necessary to include that as a mandatory component as part of your screening process? Hey, please don't smell. Hey, please, you know, be a professionally presentable and relatable human being, if it's not too much trouble, and if you want this job. Man, this is, it. I shudder to think, I honestly shudder to think how bad that really got there. Let me go ahead and go a little bit further here. Let's see. The application. This is fun. Go and get some fresh air and interact with real people. I don't care if you've led a team on Call of Duty or Dungeons and Dragons. What real work experience do you have? If not, we have positions we can train too. Okay. This guy clearly knows who he's talking to, at the very least, as far as who he senses his target audience for this ad ordinarily mostly consists of. There is quite a prejudice for against hardcore gamers in this realm, it would seem. Let's see. By which I mean, like, I guess that sort of thing happens a lot over there. The George Pub and Grill faced losing its license in 2019 after asking its customer if they would punch their ex-partners in the face for a steak, and was accused of making light of domestic violence. Whoa. Craig refused, the shop owner refused to apologize for the post, despite the advertising standards agency saying the advert had breached its code, but did remove it from Facebook. Wow. Yeah, that goes a bit far. Personally, I think that goes a bit far, but anyway. Back to this main thing here about the job listing here. Yeah, this sounds like a bizarre level of specificity that is really weird to me, that they actually had to go ahead and go this far out of their way to filter that incorporate that into the screening process. Like, they must be really trying hard to get what I guess the state of California would call an A rating, you know, those restaurant ratings that appear in the window. You know, I'm actually, upon reading that, I'm actually kind of wondering now what they would have now, you know, given the fact that A, apparently they've had a lot of difficulties with that in the past, and B, they apparently are really short-staffed as it is. So, quality of service, ouch, I don't know. Hopefully they get that figured out pretty soon. We have a comment on YouTube. You wouldn't want a customer because of ugly feet? Wow. I mean, it should go without saying that, hey, maybe wear, you know, boots or like something that like doesn't have like, you know, open-toed shoes or something while you're fixing and serving food for paying customers. I would think that's, I've worked in food service a couple times before, you know, there are certain elements of the dress code that you kind of have to abide by. They're kind of a given just for sanitary reasons, you know? I don't know. Should go without saying. Anyway, let's move on to the next topic here. This is from Guinness World Records. World's oldest dog living, wow, confirmed as 22-year-old toy fox terrier. Wow. Let's take a look at that. Let's see here. Okay, so when Taylor, South Carolina, USA, this is from the Guinness World Records website directly. When Taylor, South Carolina residents Bobby and Julie Gregory decided to welcome a puppy into their family, they had no idea that over two decades later, their treasured Pebbles would hold a record title for the oldest dog living. Born March 28, 2000, wow, the 4-pound Toy Fox Terrier is an astonishing 22 years and 59 days old and still showing the world that anything is possible, P-A-W, possible. After news of the former oldest dog living, Toby Keith, first broke, the Gregorys realized that Pebbles was older. Wow. Bobby was sitting on the, Julie said, quote, Bobby was sitting on the couch and friends and family started texting and calling about a story they saw about a 21-year-old dog getting the record. When I saw Toby Keith's story all over the news, I applied, end quote. Pebbles' family originally hoped to adopt a large breed dog when they first set their eyes on the pocket-sized pup. Wow. So this is one of those things that, yep, there it is. There's the picture there on the right side of the screen here, on the opposite side of the screen here. So that's the Guinness World Records certificate. The oldest dog living is Pebbles, born 28 March 2000, who is 22 years, 50 days old, as verified in Taylor, South Carolina, USA, on 17 May, 2022. Yep, there you go. Wow. Now, the only question, I guess, now is, you know, who's going to go ahead and top this? And I wonder if there's, like, at a certain point, if this really is kind of like just broad brush oldest dog living. It's pretty safe to say that it is, clearly, because of the title of this the title of this record. But like, it almost is interesting when you think about the breed of dogs, that there's a difference in breed of dog between Pebbles and Toby Keith, I think was the name of the other dog. You know, it's at a certain point, depending on like the age of this record, eventually someday, I wonder if they would have to sort of splinter offshoots of this record off to sort of factor in a particular breed or a particular weight class or classification of dog, you know, to sort of like open the floodgates to allow more people, more dogs, more dog owners a shot at getting this record that they otherwise wouldn't be eligible for because someone has an older dog that just happens to be of a different breed or different class. Well, that shouldn't basically speak for the entire species unless you can, in which case maybe that dog should get two records, basically one for their species one for their breed and one for just the species being a dog, the oldest dog and the oldest of your breed. That I think would probably be the next logical step after this. I almost wonder like how old this particular record is. Like, did they has this record been in effect only within the last few years, or you know, because there's new records popping up all the time from Guinness, you know, so it kind of stands to reason that there's a chance of this having to be updated, or that the metrics by which they judge someone to be eligible or confirmed as being worthy of that particular record gets determined. I think it's the right way to phrase that. But anyway, that's about that here. Let's go ahead and move on, where it's about 6:20 right now, a little after 6:20 on the East Coast. Let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the docket here. This looks interesting. Me from a being from a computer science background, I find this one engineer interesting here. This is from UPI, our good friends at UPI. Northwestern engineers develop smallest remote controlled walking robot. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look. A team of Northwestern University engineers announced the invention of the world's smallest remote-controlled walking robot, which measures only 0.5 millimeter wide. Crab-like robot is smaller than the thickness of a penny. Wow. Hold on a second. So you're telling me, let me see if I can literally just do this right now. You're telling me that, whoops, hang on. Yes, I'm actually reaching for a penny right now. Okay, so you're telling me that a penny, you're telling me that this thing is thinner than this, basically. Wow. Okay, let's take a closer look at this YouTube video here. Try and turn this volume up a little bit more here. Wow, look at that. Did you see that? Hang on a second. Let me go ahead and back this up a bit. Look at that. That is the outer edge of a penny, and this robot is just like squarely in the middle of it. I've never seen anything like that small in this field before. That is crazy. That is crazy tiny. That is a penny that thing is walking on top of right there. Come on, play. Shoot. There it is. Wow, look at the intricacy of the design. These crabs can walk, bend, twist, turn, and jump without complex hardware, hydraulics, or electricity. Interesting. I almost wonder, like, what are the applications of this? There's some pop-up books to manufacture the robots. There's no actual, like, narration in here, obviously. It's just, those of you listening on the podcast, they just have the stuff on screen here. The robots someday can perform tasks and fight to body. Interesting. Yeah, this is interesting. This is very interesting to me. I come from a computer science background, mainly in the field of cybersecurity. Like, my major was information assurance back in college. So like, this is more of an electronic engineering sort of focus than cybersecurity. But having this sort of explained with a medical sort of connotation really sort of couches it as far as the possible applications for this, in terms of like being able to do stuff like deliver, you know, medicine payloads in very targeted ways, you know, to certain areas of the body, like it was saying, like we sometimes see in movies and TV examples of nanobots in doing like cellular repair, like repairing cellular damage, you know, when the body has gone through like lots of physical trauma, or when you have like fingers that need to get amputated, you know, for whatever reason, like an accident or some medical emergency, and they had to lose an extremity like that. You know, we've seen examples of sometimes technology like this being used to help rebuild the human body. Like, if this is really like on this, if we're really at this point in microtechnology, like, I think we're closer than we might otherwise realize to being able to really do that and make science fiction science fact. You know, and that's always kind of fascinated me about these kinds of scientific discoveries. Because at the end of the day, anything that starts off in the field of science fiction, anything has at least a plausible chance of being made into science fact eventually, as technology sort of grows and advances. Hang on a second. There we go. As science grows and advances, and the technology sort of catches up and stays ahead, ideally, of where the larger culture is at the time. You know, like the most famous example that comes to my mind immediately is cell phones. You know, Star Trek basically helped introduce the idea of things like cell phones and Bluetooth technology, you know, those badges they would always wear on their Starfleet uniforms. That's basically Bluetooth technology that we were being introduced to in, I want to say 1966 is when Star Trek first started, the Shatner and Nimoy era. I mean, this is basically in that same realm of holy crap. This is real. This is realer than we think. And it's potentially capable of being of really serious benefit to a lot of people really soon. And I'm actually happy to see that. This gives me a little bit of hope for the future, if I'm being honest here. So long as they don't make these things capable of artificial intelligence, can you imagine what these machines would be like with like Skynet brain, with Ultron brain? You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is one of those things where let's keep this kind of technology on a very firm, very short leash, just on principle, because science fiction has also done a bang up job of showing us cautionary tales of what can and will probably go horribly wrong if stuff like this is allowed to just completely go off the rails and, you know, develop organically and unrestrictedly. So glad to see that we're still making this kind of advancement. Glad to see that we're still forward thinking in terms of the benefits to humanity, but let's try and temper that with some reasonable controls and keep this stuff as far away from AI as possible. I want to be able to see what's coming to get me. I don't need something thinner than a penny, you know, trying to kill me. No, thanks. Let's move on. Let's move on to the next topic here. Let's see if I can get this put together. Here we go. All right, next topic. This is from UPI. Bearded dragon rescued from SpongeBob pineapple toy. Okay, I'll do it. Who lives in a pineapple under the sea? All right. That's all I'm going to do with that. Let's see. Here we go. So this was posted 3 days ago, it looks like. Veterinarians in Massachusetts said a bearded dragon named Randy was brought to the emergency room with a toy pineapple stuck over his head. Wow. Yeah, this is that's a little bizarre for multiple reasons. I wasn't aware of dragons still being that much of a thing. I was aware of the Komodo dragon. I've never heard of the bearded dragon. Is that its own like species separate from Komodo, I guess? Like, are we still, wait a minute, we still have dragons in 2022. I think that's the biggest takeaway from this topic. In 2022, the world has dragons amongst us, like at all, like as part of the species. Who knew? well, other than Komodo, obviously, like I just said, but anyway. Let's see. The New England Animal Medical Center in Bridgewater said in a Facebook post that Randy the Bearded Dragon's owners brought him in when he got his head stuck inside a toy pineapple. The post said, quote, Randy the Bearded Dragon tried to visit SpongeBob SquarePants yesterday and ended up in the ER. We're not laughing at you, Randy. We are laughing with you, end quote. The vets said they broke the toy open to free Randy without injury. The hospital wrote, quote, the pineapple didn't make it, but Randy's back home happily laying in the sun. It was the cutest emergency we've ever had, end quote. Okay. Yeah, that's, yeah, that might be a special kind of traumatic for the animal, obviously, but yeah, this is one of those things that you don't really believe happening in real life, especially when you factor in the type of thing this is, the SpongeBob pineapple house. Like, there are real toys of that, you know, and apparently we still have dragons, like I said, and one can get stuck in the other, apparently. Apparently that's a thing, and I know that now. I did not know that before I started this show tonight, so there you go. If you want to read more about this, consult the books at your local library. No, I'm kidding. Just check the links down below in the description. And let's go ahead and move on. I think we have a couple more left to go tonight. Thanks so much to those of you who are at home watching along with our weird news show tonight. We have a couple more weird headlines, but don't forget to smash that like button and the subscription notification bell. And drop a comment if you like while you're here. Let's see. We're also live on Instagram, by the way, at Weekend Showcase. We've been doing that consistently. We're actually in the process of upgrading a few different things about this broadcast. Hopefully we'll be able to announce more about that in the coming days and weeks ahead. For now, let's go ahead and get back on track here. I think we have 5 more topics here. Yeah, 5 more topics before we shut the show down for the week. Let's go ahead and move forward. Next topic is from Huffington Post. Dolphins recognize each other by tasting one another's urine. Ugh. Well, I can't skip more than one. Darn it. I already skipped one earlier today because I didn't want to read about the dog from earlier with the arrow incident. But we've already got this in the comments down below anyway. We may as well check this out. At least nobody's dead. This is from Huffington Post. Apparently, this is what we cover now. May 23rd, this was published 6 days ago, it looks like. It's a whiz of a discovery, thanks, Huffington Post. New research suggests that the ocean mammals have a unique sense of taste that allows them to sense friends and family members through pee and other excretions. According to the study published in the journal Science Advances, researchers had a singular, purpose, yeah, a little intentional faux pas there, or misspeak, to see how the sea creatures reacted to urine samples from different individuals. Turns out dolphins were more likely to show interest in urine collected from animals they knew rather than randos. Professor Vincent Yannick, director of the Scottish Oceans Institute and lead author of the study, told The Guardian, quote, "Dolphins explored urine samples for longer if they came from known animals or when they were presented together with the dolphin's unique and distinctive signature whistle, an acoustic identifier that works like a name." Okay, so they put Flipper and his various known associates in a tank, and they just sort of, I guess, spray them with, like, you know, underwater. They just sort of, like, I don't know, shoot the liquid. Like, how they would have to do an extraction process, and then, like, it's difficult to really think through how they would have tested this. Like, how do you sort of, like, determine, number one, how do you do that kind of an extraction? Number two, how do you determine the extent of the familiarity that the animal would have with whatever whoever was the source animal that the sample came from? And, like, how do you determine, oh God, this is uncomfortable to think about, if I'm being brutally honest. This is one of those things. Oh, this is funny. The sub-headline under this, this is marine biologist Jason Brooks said, quote, "Usually dolphins get bored with my experiments. We were tapping into something that is part of the dolphins' world," end quote. Okay, so you're telling me that the dolphins that comprise your sample set, they usually, they're not usually as excited with your experiments, sir, as they were with being sprayed or, like, tasting or, like, just generally being around bodily waste from others of their species. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and file this one under, I did not need to know that, but now I do. So there you go. And knowing is half the battle, as G.I. Joe famously taught us all back in the 80s. Hey, what do y'all think about this? Drop a comment in the chat feed if you have any extra thoughts on this or any of the other topics that we're covering tonight, all of which are linked down in the description below. Ugh. All right, let's move on. Next topic, here it is. This is from The Mirror. Mystery of terrifying big gray man that haunts UK's second highest mountain. Is this another one of those Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster? We've covered a couple of those already. Ugh. Let's move on. It's already 6:40. Let's move on to the next topic. It's in the description down below if you actually want to read about it. But for now, we gotta move on. Let's move on to the next topic here. This is from National Public Radio. This 830-million-year-old crystal might contain life, and we're about to open it. I don't know. This sounds like a horror movie trying to happen. Like, who knows what kind of ancient microbial organisms, you know, might be present in something like that, and then they're going to crack it open and unleash it out. Jeez, we just got through a crazy, I almost said plague. You know what I mean? Freaking 2020. Jeez. Let's move on. There's an audio clip in here, but it's not really visual. Let's move on. Let's see. Oh, here's a YouTube clip. This is way too vertical. Whatever. let's take a look at this. Is that it? Nope, nothing. All right, I guess that was just a visual sample. All right, let's go ahead and move up to the actual story here. From lemons to ham, salt is a handy food preservative. A researcher studying some really old salt crystals found them preserving something else, evidence of life. Kathy Bennison, a geologist at West Virginia University, said, quote, there are little cubes of the original liquid from which that salt grew. And the surprise for us is that we also saw shapes that are consistent with what we would expect from microorganisms, and they could be still surviving within that 830 million year old preserved microhabitat, end quote. Okay, wow, this almost throws my entire perception of salt into question, really. Because it's like, it almost reminds me of Horton Hears a Who. You remember that famous Dr. Seuss story about basically this notion of universes like that are tiny, that are so impossibly tiny, there's no way you could possibly conceive of who, or what could be inside them, or even for us to know that we might be a part of a super, super tiny universe or reality or whatever that beings above us couldn't possibly conceive of our existence. You know, it's a really sort of fascinating story about, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, existence. And this actually kind of reminds me of that, you know, where you have no idea what could be within, could be inside of these ancient salt crystals, apparently. But let me see, here we go. The salt crystals, aka halite, going back to the story, that Bennison and her team studied were originally found in Central Australia. Bennison was part of the team that published these findings in the journal Geology. And then it goes down to the video of a different salt crystal shows how the liquid looks when moving inside. Let's see, here we are. Bennison suspects that if there are in fact microorganisms in the crystal, they could be alive in a dormant state. The halite would need to be opened in order to confirm that this is in fact organic matter and it is still alive. So don't open it! Don't open it! This is a problem that solves itself so long as you don't open Pandora's box. I can't believe this even needs to be said. You know, why did this even have to make it into like the press to where like we have to be aware of these ancient life forms? Oh yeah, they're dormant, don't worry about it. It's 830 million year old organisms and possibly a microcosm of the natural state of the world millions of years ago, that there's no way any of us like this far down the evolutionary line in terms of humans or in terms of any other animal or sentient life could possibly be able to combat from an immune system perspective if there is something dangerous in there. Why would you leave the entire planet open to that by even thinking about cracking this open? I gotta say, this is a weird news topic that makes me a little angry. And at least there's something in here. I read ahead a little bit here. At least I'm glad that this is being addressed here with the very next paragraph. While cracking into that crystal might seem a bold choice, we're currently battling a global pandemic caused by microscopic viruses. After all, Bennison plans to do just that. But she said there was no need to worry. Yeah, you would say that. She said, quote, it does sound like a really bad B-movie, but there is a lot of detailed work that's been going on for years to try to figure out how to do that in the safest possible way, end quote. Yeah, I'll tell you how. Don't do it. Don't do it. Easy. Problem solved. Not a big deal. Just saying. Yeah, she actually says it here, like, quote, an environmental organism that has never seen a human is not going to have the mechanism to get inside of us and cause disease. So I personally, from a science perspective, have no fear of that, end quote. Okay, she says that because this thing is hundreds of millions of years old, it won't be able to cause problems. It's literally too simple, evolutionarily speaking, to cause harm to us this far down the line. You really want to take that chance? You really want to be held responsible for taking that chance if it goes sideways? Really? Like scientific exploration, yada, yada. But really? Seriously? I wouldn't. You know, at a certain point, it's like I was saying, like with the really tiny, like width of a penny or whatever, crab robots from the previous story or a couple stories ago. Science has to sort of like, there has to be a line. I feel like with stuff like this, there has to be a line, and it can't just be implied. It has to be universally understood and agreed upon that it's a bad idea to potentially unleash a hundreds of millions of years old organism or series of organisms, we have no idea, into the larger ecosystem in the name of scientific exploration. You know, I mean, you actually have evidence that you're working with that suggests this could be a thing if you go any further. It should be like, this is the line. This is the actual line right here. Just don't cross that line. Just don't cross the line. That's all I'm saying. I'd vote no on that. I vote no on line crossing. That is just, I'm Don Shannon, and I do not approve any of that line crossingness. Let's move on. Jeez. That was just trifling. That was uncomfortable to read, I gotta say. Let's see. New York Post has man spends $15,000 on high-tech dog costume to fulfill his lifelong dream. What? Come on, New York Post. What are you doing? Brother. His nickname is Good Boy. Womp womp. A Japanese man is going viral after spending more than 15 grand on a hyper-realistic costume so he could fulfill his lifelong dream of becoming a dog. A clip of the man masquerading as Lassie has racked up more than 600,000 YouTube views since it was posted in April. Oh my God. Come on. Come on. Describing his inspiration for becoming his own best friend. Let's see. Oh, sorry. I made it a collie because it looks real when I put it on, canine cosplayer Toko-san told local news outlet Minavi of the furry getup, for which he paid Zeppet, a company that makes costumes for TV commercials and films, a whopping $15,709, Yahoo reported. The final product took 40 days and multiple revisions to create. Wow. Describing his inspiration for becoming his own best friend, Toko-san said, "My favorite is quadrupedal animals, especially cute ones. Among them, I thought that a big animal close to me would be good, considering they would be a realistic model, so I decided to make it a dog." Wow. Well, I gotta say, that is a realistic-looking costume. I mean, we do have a community of people just stateside. I believe they're commonly referred to as furries. That I believe would relish the opportunity to do this, theoretically. The facial details are amazing, I gotta say, on that costume. The paws look like bear paws, though, I gotta say. Like, I've never seen, like, a collie with, like, paws that look like that. I'll try to zoom in a little bit closer here. That's a bit much for me. Like, that dog very badly would need some sort of a pedicure. But... yeah, that is a person in there. Man, let's see. The point is that the skeleton of a dog can be reproduced on the skeleton of a human. Since the structure of the skeleton is very different, we spent a lot of time studying how to make it look like a dog, an unnamed design employee told Minavi. In addition, we collect photographs taken from various angles so that the beautiful coat of the collie can be reproduced and devised so that the coat will flow naturally. Wow. Yep, that'll do it. I'm only curious about, like, how do they handle the hind legs? Because, like, those look like proportionally sized hind legs. Like, does the person have to, like, be on their tiptoes inside the suit? And, like, how does that... I don't know, how they would have to, like, hide the knees or whatever? Because, like, the physics of, like, a human sort of, like, contorting themselves into a costume like this, like, it doesn't really line up perfectly with the physiology and, like, skeletal structure of an animal like this, necessarily, you know? So, I don't know. This is... There are a few different levels of sus to this, but at least the finished product looks good. I can say that much. So, there you go. That does look like a costume that costs $15,000. That's pretty much all I can say to that. Let's go ahead and move on to the next topic here. It's about 6:45 on the East Coast, 3:45 on the West. Once again, thanks so much to those of you at home for tuning in and joining me tonight for Weird News. Don't forget to hit that like button and the notification bell down below. Let's see, here we go. I think this is our last topic for tonight. Too many tats. All right, man with 848 square tattoos all over his body says he sneezes black ink. Whoa, this is gnarly. This is very gnarly. Oh my goodness. This is from the Mirror, posted yesterday, May 28th. A man who boasts the record for the most square tattoos on his body has said he was left sneezing black ink after his nose was done. What, did he get the inside of his nose done? Matt Gone or Gone, G-O-N-E is how it's spelled, holds a Guinness World Record for the remarkable 848 black squares tattooed on his body, which was confirmed by two doctors who had to count them for him. The American said the process has been painful. This is the Mirror is a UK publication, obviously. The American said the process has been painful, particularly when getting his nose and baby toes painted, and even left him sneezing ink. Speaking in a video for Guinness World Records YouTube channel, he said, quote, the most painful spot on the body to get tattooed, the nose. That is the most painful, even the baby toes. The nail beds hurt a lot. I sneezed up black ink for about, that's the finished product there. Good grief. I sneezed up black ink for about 20 minutes after that, and it was the most painful thing I'd ever been through, end quote. Okay, the story says he got his first tattoo in 1985 and has since then even tattooed his tongue and eyeballs. Oh my God. Yeah, tattooed eyeballs? How do you tattoo an eyeball? This is traumatizing to look at, honestly. This is crazy. We have a comment on YouTube. Some folks just don't know what to do with their money. Yeah, that's one way to put it. That's probably the best, simplest way to put it, because you know this was crazy expensive to do over however much time it took to do. Jeez. First tattoo in 1985. Okay, so you're looking at 37 years, roughly. Holy crap. He says his tongue is tattooed, but it was hypodermic injections. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's wow. That's trauma. That's nightmare fuel. That's traumatizing right there. 848 square tattoos all over his body. That's crazy. Okay. Well, if you are genuinely curious about this or other topics over the course of the night, we have all of our links in the description down below. That actually is all of the topics that we have for tonight. If you have any topics that you'd like to suggest for us to cover next week, please feel free to drop a comment or shoot us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram at Weekend Showcase. And that's basically a wrap for this week's headlines. I'm trying to think of which one is my favorite over the course of this. Like, this is, there were a lot of really bizarre ones tonight. Let me see. Probably this one, the smallest remote controlled walking robot, I think was my favorite one tonight. Just from a pure scientific perspective, again, having come from a computer science background as I do. But what was your favorite tonight? Feel free to drop a comment down below to continue the conversation. And please visit any of our social pages. We're at Weekend Showcase pretty much everywhere. And we'll see you right here once again this coming Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific for another brand new trailer reaction show. And I hope to see you then. For now, please be safe. I hope you're having a great weekend. Have a happy Memorial Day. And showcase you later. I'm Don Shannon. Good night.